And I want to remind us that these chapters, again, these chapters are not written in any chronological order. Chapter 22 actually comes before chapter 21 in time. We might notice chapter 21, verse 3, is saying to Zedekiah. Zedekiah was the last king to reign at all. He reigned out of God's will. And then in chapter 2, verse 11, we are writing to Shalom, the son of Josiah. So Shalom was quite a bit earlier than Zedekiah was in reigning. In First Chronicles 3:15, we have the genealogy of Josiah, and he had four sons mentioned there. Nancy, read that. But when they started to reign, his fourth son reigned in his stead. It wasn't his first son. We don't have any record of Johanan. He evidently died a very young person, because we don't have much concerning him. But the second son, then, Jehoiakim, he reigned after Jehoahaz reigned. Jehoahaz only reigned 3 months. Then Jehoiakim began to reign, and he was Pharaoh's choice. And then when Babylon came in and Pharaoh had to leave, then he was removed, and Zedekiah was put into place. So actually Jehoiakim and his son Jehoiachin, those names got to mix up sometimes. Yeah. But he isn't mentioned in there because he's the son of Jehoiakim. So he didn't mention that lineage. But Zedekiah then was an uncle to Jehoiachin. And he wasn't in the lineage at all. So anyway, what we're saying is these sons of Josiah reigned not according to age. So Shalom reigned first, and then others after him. And then Zedekiah was the last one. His real name was Mattaniah. And anyway, let's look at our lesson. I just want us to see that this was written before chapter 21 was written. Thus saith the Lord, go down to the house of the king of Judah, and speak there this word, and say, hear the word of the Lord, O king of Judah, that sitteth upon the throne of David. Thou and thy servants, and thy people that enter in by these gates, thus saith the Lord, execute judgment and righteousness, and deliver the spoiled out of the hand of the oppressor, and do no wrong, do no violence to the stranger, the fatherless, the widow, neither shed innocent blood in this place. And so the word now of the Lord comes to the kings of them, and every king is guilty of what we read in these verses. So the word is to the king of Judah, which, as we read, was in verse 11, the Shalom was the one that we're talking about. And so he was to go down unto the gate, King's Gate, and then speak to them. The thought, I think, of going down might be a little significant there too, because he was either on higher ground or this was a position that the kings had taken, a lower than what God would want them to be. And so verse 3 now is an interesting verse, because in chapter 21 we have the similar warning to Zedekiah. I'm trying to find it there. Well, you can read that. We had it last week. I'm not going back into that again. But there was a similar warning there. I think it's verse 12 of there. Yeah, verse 12. But you look at this, and according to nature and according to the old creation, it just couldn't be done. It was our human nature is contrary to that. you can take a good man and get him into politics, and he's not going to be good very long. There's too many ways of being crooked. One day, the Liars Club, you know, they had to see who could tell the biggest lie, and one got up and said, "I once knew an honest politician," and he won immediately. Nobody went against him. But, and they say, vote for the best man. Why should you want to ruin the best man? Might as well vote for the one that's already ruined. But anyway, these can't be. But you might say, well, why did God tell them to do this then? Well, it's the same reason he gave the Ten Commandments, to show them the weakness, show them their need to depend upon him. And so they were told to execute judgment, righteousness, deliver the spoil out of the hand of the oppressor. And instead of that, they oppress people instead of giving them oppression, and do no wrong. That's a big mouthful there, isn't it? Do no wrong. And do no violence to the stranger, to the orphans and the widows, and don't shed innocent blood. And if you do these things, here's kind of an ultimatum here. If you do these things indeed, then you shall enter into the gates. Everything is going to be wonderful. You're going to sit on the throne of David and continue to reign down through the ages. You'll be riding in chariots and on horses, and his servants and his people, and everything is going to be wonderful. But if you don't, verse 5, if you will not hear the words which I swear by myself, saith the Lord, that is, at this house shall become a desolation. This phrase, I swear by myself, there's no greater to swear by. I was trying to think of where that verse is in Revelation, but the Lord come and he put one foot upon the land and one foot upon the sea, and he swore by him that liveth forever and ever. There was no greater to swear by than to swear by himself. And in Hebrews chapter 6, Roberta, look at it for me. Hebrews chapter 6, reads verse 17. See, and there was no greater to swear by, see, than to swear by himself. And so he swore that if they didn't keep his ordinance, keep his word, then they would go into a state of dissolution. Verse 6, thus saith the Lord unto the king's house of Judah, thou art Gilead unto me, and the head of Lebanon. Yet surely I will make thee a wilderness, and the cities which are not inhabited. Gilead means a rolling away, and it's on the east side of Jordan. It's what we would know now as part of Arabia, and it was a beautiful land. It was given to Ephraim, Gad, and a half tribe of Manasseh. And the reason they wanted it is because it was a place for the cattle. There was plenty of food there, and the valleys were beautiful. And so we can see the beautiful rolling hills of Gilead. It was known for the cattle and the sheep. And then we have the head of Lebanon, and it was known for its beauty and production. The tops of Mount Lebanon were always white with snow. The word Lebanon itself means whiteness from that name. And then you drop down a little farther on the mountain and you had the most beautiful cedars. Oh, it was beautiful. And then the snow would run down, and below the cedar line there was very fruitful land. And God says, to me, this is what you're like. Nancy, look up Psalms 108, verse 8. And he says that Lebanon is mine. I can't quote it. Go ahead. So this, he claims all of this is his. Well, he said, thou art Gilead unto me. And he's talking about the beauty and the value and everything that Judah should be unto the Lord. The beauty of Lebanon should be here. They should be unto the Lord. But they weren't. And so he says, yet surely, or we might translate that, even so, surely I will make a wilderness in the cities which are not the inhabitant, and I will prepare destroyers against thee, everyone with his weapons, and they shall cut down the choice cedars and cast them into a fire. Notice the word here, destroyers, is plural. And Greg, in 2 Kings 24, 2, you'll find different nations that came against Judah when they were to be conquered. Moab and Ammon and, read that in there. See, so there were several destroyers there, weren't they? And the scripture tells us that God is going to deal with them. Ezekiel 25 tells that. You can look it right up when you write it down, look it up when you get home. Ezekiel 25, 8 through 12, I think it is, tells us God's dealing with Moab and them. But he said, I will prepare destroyers, everyone with his weapon. And people might say, well, is that honest of God to judge those people that he used to destroy with? Well, they wanted to do it anyway. He didn't change their heart any. He just used them as a tool. Every one of these weapons, and they shall cut down the choice cedar. A lot of people think that this is a figure of speech here, because these are the things that Judah boasted in. There's the beauty of the cedars and the beauty. See, Lebanon was actually in Israel, but everything that they made, the temple was made out of the cedars of Lebanon. Their palaces was made out of the cedars of Lebanon. And so they esteem this to be very precious to them. Well, God says, I'm going to cast them into fire, the things that you count precious. And many nations shall pass by in this city, and they shall say, every man to his neighbor, wherefore hath the Lord done thus unto this great city? And this is prophesied that they would do this. Maxine, look up Deuteronomy 29, 24 and 25. And this was all prophesied that Jerusalem, this great city, that they would say just exactly this to them. And when they said it, then they would answer, because they have forsaken the covenant of the Lord, their God, and worship other gods and serve them. I read that in Deuteronomy. So this was prophesied even as they come out of Egypt. And this is when they came out of bondage, and God told them then, and now we see them going into bondage because they wouldn't listen to God, even to Moses. Then in verse 10 he says, weep ye not for the dead, neither bemoan him. Now notice the first person here, him, the singular. And this is speaking of the Shalom especially. And these died, and every one of these went into captivity. Every one of them died, these kings died in a foreign land. But you weep for him that goeth away, for he shall return no more nor see his native country. So the dead can't suffer anymore. Don't weep for the dead. Jesus, when he was going to the cross, he says, daughters of Jerusalem, don't weep for me. You weep for those others that will say. Dead people, sufferings are all over. It's those that go away. And all the kings from Jehoahaz to Zedekiah was taken out of the city and never come back. Jehoahaz went to Egypt, according to 2 Chronicles 36, 4. Jehoiakim was taken to Babylon, according to verse 6 of the same chapter. Jehoiachin was taken to Babylon, verse 10 of the same chapter. And Zedekiah was taken to Babylon, according to verse 7. And Zedekiah, all of his sons, were killed before his eyes, and then they put his eyes out and took him to Babylon. So all of these kings experienced this, and none of them returned to his native land. Then he goes, verse 11, for thus saith the Lord, touching Shalom, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, which reigned instead of Josiah, his father, which went forth out of his place, he shall not return thither anymore. He was taken to Egypt, and he never came back. But he shall die in the place whither they have led him captive, and shall see this land no more. Then in verses 13 through 17, we have the woe to him that builds houses, does big things, builds houses by unrighteousness, and his chambers by wrongdoing would be a good rendering of that. That uses his neighbor's service without wages, forced labor, and giveth him not for his work, or refuse to pay him for his work. Habakkuk has close to that. Roberta, is it you read that? Roberta, look up Habakkuk 2:9 and Nancy, James 5, first six verses of James 5. And Greg, 1 Thessalonians 4, 6 and 7. All of these is pertaining to self-gain. Notice what Habakkuk said about this. Covet is big thing, you see. And then in James gives us some warning concerning rich man. Somebody might say, what's wrong with money? What's wrong with being rich? Well, the money itself, there's nothing wrong with. It's what money does to people. People just can't get rich enough. Somebody said to Rockefeller and said, how much money is enough money? And he said, just a little bit more. And so people don't ever have enough. They want to cheat. They want to get a little more than what they had. And this is what James is warning about. Then in 1 Thessalonians 4, I think Paul brings the same thought right down to us, is don't act like the heathens do. And so we're to be different than they, aren't we? Then we read, and saith, I will build me wide house, or a large house, and large chambers or rooms in my house, and cutteth out him out windows. Actually, the word window, a better rendering of that is perforations. What they would do, they would cut holes there, and then they put the lattice to where it looked like small perforations there to hold them. That kept people from looking in, and they could look out and also let light in. And is called with, it is sealed with cedar and painted vermilion. I looked up the word vermilion. I didn't know what it meant. And it means to be paint bright red. Vermilion, is that what you said? Well, anyway, to paint bright red. And so they all, the wood just couldn't be big enough. They wanted all these things. Then he says, shall thou reign because thou hast chosen, closeth thyself in cedar? Does this make a good king? Is this what makes you be able to reign good? Because you got this big house and big rooms and nice windows and all these things that you have painted real nice. Then he refers them back to their father. Did not thy fathers eat and drink and do judgment and justice? And it was well with them. See, they did all right. They didn't have the same thing that you keep coveting and wanting. Then we read verse 16, and he judged and caused the poor and the needy. Then it was well with him. Was not this to know me, said the Lord? See, the ones who really knew him, they judged honestly. And the king was, one of his jobs was to make decisions and judge people. Like the noted Solomon and his wisdom that he used to judge the people with. Well, this is, they just needed the Lord to do these things. But thine eyes and thine heart are not but for thy covetousness. This is the only thing you want, only thing you look for is wanting more for yourself. And to shed innocent blood and for oppression and for violence to do it. Now, they got this from the heathen. And we have warnings too. Maxine, look up Ephesians 4:17 through 20. And it tells us not to do like the heathen does, but to be a different people. And this is what God wanted out of his people Israel, to be different than the other nations, to be separated unto him. But they want to be like the other nations. You have not so learned Christ. This is the way the heathen does it, the Gentile. This isn't what you learned of the Lord. And so we're saying the same thing there to us as God was saying to them. Verse 18, therefore thus saith the Lord concerning Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, they shall not lament for him, saying, ah, my brother, ah, my sister. They shall not lament for him, saying, ah, Lord, ah, his glory. And how great this man was, and how he lorded over people, and his glory was beyond measure. But Jehoiakim, when he died in Babylon, he had no royal funeral. In fact, probably wasn't anybody there. No brothers, no sisters, nobody that care. Absolutely, see, nobody was there. His rulership had no glory, nothing. He shall be buried with a barrel of as ass drawn and cast forth beyond the gates of Jerusalem. Now, this is the way his burial. Well, it doesn't mean that he was buried by Jerusalem, but he was, the type of burial that he had was like an ass or a mule that was drawn or laid, put to death, and cast outside the gates of the city. Most of the time they were in the valley of sons of Hinnah when they put them down in there to burn. Well, this was a type of burial that he said. He wouldn't be any more than a mule burial. And yet he was king and thought he was had everything. Verse 20, go ye up to Lebanon and cry and lift up your voice in Bashan and cry from the passage, for all thy lovers are destroyed. There's no one to seek. You can cry northward, you can cry eastward, and no one's going to help you. The word passage here is a Hebrew, from the Hebrew word that could be translated regions beyond, speaking of beyond Jordan and the beautiful valleys in there. Well, no matter, there was no help. Today, this area, as I said, what we talked about Bashan, it was part of what we know now as Arabia. Verse 21, I speak to thee in thy prosperity, but thou sayest, I will not hear. This hath been thy manner from thy youth, and thou obeyest not my voice. When they were prosperous, and everything was going fine, the good times was all around them, God began to talk to them and show them when that they were going the wrong direction. But they wouldn't listen. The question we might ask here, is prosperity good for God's people? And let me give you a little example of that. Rome tried their best to destroy the Christians, and the Christians grew and became stronger. When Constantine became Emperor of Rome, he stopped persecution, and they went spiritually downhill fast. When they began to be prosperous and got a name for themselves, they lost out spiritually. And so when they were prosperous, they wouldn't listen. And so God's going to have to take all this prosperity away to get them. You know, there's people today that think if you're not prosperous, you're not spiritual. But God's word says just the opposite of that. These people, their sin was a sin, it was a willful sin. It was not a sin of ignorance. A sin of ignorance, there was a sacrifice for. A willful sin, it was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And there was no sacrifice for that. So this was a willful sin. They just would not hear. The wind, verse 22, shall eat up all thy pastors, and thy lovers shall go into captivity. Surely then thou shalt be ashamed and confounded for all thy wickedness. The word wind here has a thought of destructive wind, or very hot wind that would destroy. And that's what Babylon was to them. It was a strong, destructive wind. Wind has a thought of spirits in many places in the scripture. A pastor is one that's supposed to be feeding the sheep. Well, if they're not going to feed the sheep, then God says, I'm going to feed you to the wind. I'm going to feed you to Babylon. Your lovers, they've already gone into captivity. Surely then thou shalt be ashamed. When you get into that. And that's what God needs to do, is to bring them down to shame and confound them for all thy wickedness. Thy inhabitants of Lebanon, that makest thy nest in the cedars. Oh, here's something to boast in. Oh, how great this was. But notice what he says. How gracious thou shalt be when pangs come. This is kind of an irony statement that God was making to them. You're so big and beautiful and nice, and how gracious you're going to be, how beautiful you're going to be when the pangs of death, the pangs of pain comes, when the destroyer comes. It's going to be like the pangs of a woman in travail. Verse 24, as I live, saith the Lord, though Kaniah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were the signet of my right hand, yet I would pluck thee thence. God isn't going to change his mind at this point. He was going to judge their sin, and nothing was going to change him. And even though King Jehoiakim were a signet on his right hand, now they always carried, the king had a ring that he wore on his right hand, and it had a signet in it. Many times when they sent letters, they'd put a little piece of wax there, and then he'd put this ring down in there, and nobody dared touch it unless it reached its destination. Well, he says, this is, even if Jehoiakim were this, this is very important, the king's signet on his right hand, yet I would pluck him thence. Yeah, there's nothing, absolutely nothing that's going to override this decision. And I would give unto thee, unto the land, give thee unto the land of them that seek thy life, and into the hand of them whose face thou fearest, even into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hand of the Chaldeans. And I will cast thee out, and thy mother that bare thee, unto another country, where were ye not born, and there ye shall die. Brought into Babylon, where they never knew anything else. Now, Kaniah's mother was, I wrote her name down here, I couldn't remember. Nehushta was her name. And you read of this in 2 Kings 24:8. And her name means a bit of bronze. And bronze is a lighter and deteriorated metal from brass. Brass always speaks of judgment. And so she's also is going to be brought into judgment. And all of his family, no doubt. So I lost some place again. Verse 28, isn't it? But the land whereunto they desired to return, thither they shall not return. This man Kaniah, a despised, broken idol. Is he? Well, he wasn't at the time. See, he was the son of Jehoiakim of verse 24. Kaniah, his name is Kaniah, Jeconiah, Jehoiachin. They're all the same person. And so he was a very important person. Is he a vessel wherein there's no pleasure? Therefore, they are cast out. He, his seed, all of his children, and are cast into a land which they know not. O earth, 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 hear the word of the Lord. All over, everywhere on the earth, hear the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, write ye this man childless, a man that shall not prosper in his days. For no man of his seed shall prosper, sitting on the throne of David and ruling any more in Judah. And at this time, the line of David was cut off. There's no more kings after Kaniah or Jeconiah to reign. You might talk about, I can't even think, my mind just went blank. Zedekiah. Well, see, Zedekiah was Nebuchadnezzar's choice. He had no right to the throne at all, and he isn't even mentioned. As far as God is concerned, the line was cut off with Kaniah, and the next king that was to reign on that throne would be the Lord Jesus Christ. And if you'll study Matthew 1, the genealogy of Jesus brings us down to Cani, or Jaconi, it says there, and then it goes on into the king, the descendants, though, of, and Joseph is in that lineage. And if they hadn't have gone into Babylonian captivity, Joseph, the foster father of Jesus, would have been sitting on the throne of David when Jesus was born. So that would make Jesus in line of the lineage. In the fourth chapter of Luke, we have another genealogy, and this is that of Mary. And it goes through another son of David called Nathan. So whether we're talking about the lineage of Mary or the lineage of Joseph, Jesus would have been king, a spiritual or a physical lineage. He had been reigning. So there's no one else to reign upon the throne of David until Jesus takes this place.